Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy. I'm pleased to bring to you the third Aliyah of Parashat or Sidrat Tzav in the book of Vayikra. V'zot Torat Zevach HaShulamim Asher Yakriv L'Adonai. This is the ritual or the set of instructions for the peace offering or the well-being offering that are offered or that is offered to the Lord. Shlamim are almost always voluntary. Usually they're called Nidarim or Nidavot. And I'll explain what those two terms are a little bit later. What we already know from the last parsha from Vayikra is the type of animals, which are either male or female cows or sheep or goats that are used for shlamim. We have already learned that the blood is sprinkled around the altar. We know what parts of the shlamim will be burnt on the altar and that it is forbidden to eat the chelev, which is the tallowy yellowish fat that covers the internal organs and the blood. It's also forbidden to eat the blood. The last two items, that which one can eat the chelev of the blood, are going to be repeated here, explained a little bit more. We also find out here, besides the repetition of the blood and the prohibition of eating the blood and the fats, or the chelev fats, we also find out that while most of the meat will be eaten by the supplicants, some of it will be eaten by the priests. We find out about a special type of shlamim called a korban todah, shlamim todah, along with some grain-based items that accompany that particular sacrifice. We're also warned about eating the shlamim while in a spiritually unclean state. And now let's get on to the text, which is going to teach us all these new things about the shlamim. And first we deal with the todah offering. Now most people translate todah in modern Hebrew, but even in ancient Hebrew, as thanks or thank you, a thanks offering, a thanksgiving. But in fact the word todah really means, it's synonymous with praise and glory, with the words l'shabeach and l'halel, such as in the sentence l'hodot u'l'halel u'l'shabeach. The word hodot is akin to hilul and shabeach, which is praise and honoring somebody. It is true that one gives this offering when one is feeling thankful, specifically because the person avoided some certain types of catastrophes, which the rabbis derive out of Tehillim Kuf Zayin, so I don't want to go into them right now. And there's no doubt that the person feels thankful for having been saved. Nonetheless, the word todah really means a praise, and therefore this would be a sacrifice. Really praising God for all the wonderful things that he did in saving the person from that catastrophe. Im al todah yakrivenu v'ekriv al zevach hatodah chalot matzot blulot bashemen urkikei matzot mishuchim bashamen v'solet murbeket chalot blulot bashamen al chalot lechem chametz yakriv korbano al zevach todat shlamav v'hikriv mimeno echad mikol korban truma ladunai lakohen azorek et adam etam ashlamim lo yihyeh uvsar zevach todat shlamav b'yom korbano yeachel lo yaniach mimeno ad boker. If it is a todah that a person is making this offering, he does it together along with the sacrifice. He offers cakes of matzah, that is, of course, unleavened bread mixed with oil, and matzah wafers, that is, hard wafers with oil spread on top of them, and cakes made from murbeket, we translate it as pre-blanched in hot water, fine flour, then mixed with oil. According to the oral law, there was 10 of each of these cakes, making 30 items, and we'll see there's about to be 10 more items as well. Evan Ezra points out that all we could really deduce from the pshat, from the plain sense of the text, is that there was more than one, because it uses plural, but the rabbis inherited the tradition that it was 10 of each. The extra 10 items were leavened bread, al-chalot lechem chametz, and it was very rare that leavened bread was actually brought as a sacrifice. I believe here is one case where it's burned on the altar, and I think on the Bikurim at the end, on Shavuot, at the end of the 49 days of the Omer, on the 50th day. But it really is quite rare for lechem, which is chametz, which is leaven, to be actually burnt on an altar. Anyway, getting back to the text, so he has these 10 leavened cakes as well, which he includes along with the rest of the Korban Todah and the 30 other non-leavened cakes. And he shall offer it, that is, one of each from the sacrifice as a gift to God to the priest who tosses the blood, who throws the blood of the offering. It belongs to him. What that means is, one of each of the four types of cakes is given to the Kohen to eat. He gets one of the hard bread, one of the soft bread, one of the bleached bread, of the parched bread and water, and one of essentially the fully chametz cakes. He's given them, and the Kohen is allowed to eat them, whereas the rest of it, since it is a shlamim, is eaten by the owner himself. So according to the rabbis, that would leave nine pieces of each, or really 4 times 9, 36 items for the person offering the shlamim, and of the todah, and 4 for the priest. Now, the meat of the Todah peace offering is to be eaten on the day it is offered, which clearly includes that night too, since the Torah merely says that nothing must be left over by the morning, Ad HaBoker. The rabbis actually prohibit eating that meat after midnight, but they admit it's a rabbinic law simply to keep people from going overtime and then going into the morning and getting into all kinds of trouble. Now, we don't know yet how the meat will be divvied up, and we will shortly, but first we leave the offering of the Todah and we go to the standard neder and nedava, which make up most of the shlamim. And there a person simply decides to offer from his flocks or cattle a sacrifice. V'im neder o nedava zevach korbano b'yom akrivo et zivcho ye'achel mimacharat v'hanotar mimeno ye'achel v'hanotar mibesar zavach b'yom ha'shlishi ba'esh yisarev v'im he'achel ye'achel mibesar zevach shlama b'yom ha'shlishi lo yeratze hamakriv oto lo yechashev lo pigul yeyeh. But if his offering, the sacrifice, is a neder, meaning the person said, I will give some animal as shlamim, a peace offering, or he makes a nedava, where a person sort of points to an animal and says, this animal I'm giving up as a peace offering, as a shlamim, it could be eaten on the day he sacrifices it, as well as on the next day, the leftovers. The notar means the leftovers, which means what's usually considered notar and not edible, because the sacrifice had to be eaten one day. For the neder and the davah, that leftover can actually be eaten on the second day. But if the leftover, the notar of the sacrifice, goes to the third day, on the third day it must be burnt in fire. And if one eats the meat of the peace offering sacrifice on that third day, or really it's passive, if the meat of the peace offering sacrifice should be eaten on the third day, it will no longer be desirable, lo yiratzeh, that is, no longer be desirable by God. The one making the offering will not have the offering count for anything for him, that is, it essentially becomes a useless effort. It becomes pigul, which literally means a disgusting thing, and the one who eats it will bear the sin, or perhaps avon here means the punishment. If we take the meaning of this passage literally, what that means is the first day, 2 days, everything is great. The guy's eating his korban, he's happy. But if he messes up and eats it on the third day, it retroactively annuls the entire sacrifice, and all of that good eating that he did during the first 2 days immediately becomes bad eating. Apparently, the sin that he pays, and the reason why it's mentioning that he has to bear the sin, or perhaps his punishment, is because if you remember, he swore, he made a neder to bring a sacrifice. So by eating on the third day, and therefore annulling the entire sacrifice, he essentially failed to keep his swear and pays the price for that as well. Now, our oral tradition does not accept this idea, the simple sense of the verse. Take a look at Rashbam that really says, you know, the rabbis deviated from the simple sense of the verse. And the reason why they do so is because they do not accept the idea that one could retroactively annul a perfectly good sacrifice, as if you could eat on the first 2 days and everything's honky-dory, and all of a sudden the meat, you know, eating on the third day transforms that good eating to bad eating. So therefore, what it says, it plays on the word yechashev, that is, the sacrifice will not be considered, that the person himself, from the very time he was doing the Kohen, from the very time that the sacrifice was being performed at the very beginning, there was, the person considered and figured that he would eat it on the third day. He planned ahead, you know, that's a lot of meat. I know I'm only supposed to eat it 2 days, but I'm going to eat it on the third day. I got a nice party on the third day all set up. So if he has bad thoughts during the sacrificial process at the very beginning, that's what's called pigul, and it goes, the sacrifice goes bad from the very inception rather than becoming retroactively bad. The next verse refers to all shlamim. Vabasar asher yigam b'chol tamei lo yeachel ba'eshi saref, vabasar kol tahor yochal basar. And the meat, i.e. of the shlamim, that comes into contact with any kind of spiritually impure thing must not be eaten, all tamei thing. It must be burnt with fire. And this means, in general, the meat, that is the meat in general, however, that is assuming it is not, does not come into contact with a spiritually unclean or impure thing, then it could be eaten by anybody, because it's kachim kalim. So, anybody could eat it, as long as, we'll find out in the following exception in the next verse. Va'nefesh asher tochal basar mitzev ha'shalim asher ladunai v'tumato alav v'nechrata nefesh ahi me'amah. So first of all, you have to make sure that the meat doesn't touch anything tameh. If it does, then nobody can eat that meat. If the meat stays tahor, if it stays pure, the only thing that then will cause a problem is if the person themselves who wants to eat the pure meat is himself impure. If one, translating now, if one eats from the peace offering sacrifice that belongs to God, and we're emphasizing that it belongs to God, that is, it may be kachim kalim, it may be light holiness, but it still belongs to God, so it has to be at a high level of state, both the food and the person, while that person is a state of ritual impurity. He could be a mitzora, he could be a zav, perhaps a keri. That person will be cut off from his people. The idea of the punishment exactly of what exactly is karet, whether it's bolam hazeh, bolam haba, exactly what the parameters are, I'm going to leave that alone for right now. V'nefesh ki tiga b'chol tamei b'tumat adam o vivema tmei'a o b'chol sheketz tamei v'achal mi b'sar zeman shlamim asher ladunai v'nechrata nefesh ha'imai mas. So it's not only a person who himself is impure, but any person who touches a ritually impure thing, such as an impure person, which would be a corpse, a leper, one with the emission of Zav, that is, if you touch that type of person and you become Tameh yourself, or the person touches an impure animal, a Behemah Tameah, which today we refer to as unkosher animal, but ritually impure animal is the correct translation, or any impure, disgusting thing, a Sheketz, which probably includes birds, invertebrates, Shratzim, that kind of animal, and then he eats from the meat of the Shlamim sacrifice that belongs to the Lord. Again, the emphasis, it belongs to the Lord, that person will become cut off, that person will be cut off from his people. Verse 22 of chapter 7 commands that the chelev fats and the blood of an animal must not be eaten. Kol chelev shor v'kesev va'ez lo tochelu v'chelev nivela v'chelev trefa ye aseh l'chom lacha. But v'achon lo tochelu. I'll translate when I get finished with the whole passage. Ki kol ochel chalev mina beima sheyakri mimena yishel adonai v'nechrata nefesh ha'ochel et me'amea v'chol dam lo tochelu v'chol moshvotechem la'of la'beima kol nefesh asher tochal kol dam v'nechrata nefesh ha'i me'amea. And the Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the children of Israel saying, and of the chalev, the yellowish tallowy fats that covers much of the internal organs, be it of an ox, like a cow or a bull, or sheep or goats, may not be eaten. Fats from the animals that dies naturally, a nevela is one that just sort of dies of old age or sickness, or that were torn, meaning it died violently by an animal attack, or if the slaughtering went bad, those chela fats may be used for any purpose. That is, you could use them, I don't know, for burning a heat lamp or whatever it is, but they may not be eaten. Indeed, the pasuk continues, ki kol ochel chelev, anyone who eats chelev fats from an animal that has to be offered as a fire-based sacrifice, that is, it should have been burnt up to the Lord, that person who eats it will be cut off from his people. He'll get karet. And any blood may not be eaten in any of your dwellings, which no doubt means not only in the desert and when you go to Israel, but no matter where you are, you may never, ever, ever touch blood. Neither animal nor bird blood, and there we probably had to mention that because one might think only animals, but not a bird blood because it's, you know, the blood is different. Note that, of course, fish blood is not included, so God clearly felt that bird blood needed to be clarified, otherwise people might think it was okay. Continuing on, any person who eats any kind of blood will be cut off from his people. Now, in verse 28, we find out what happens to the animal parts and some of the procedures of the peace offering of the Shlamim. First, we have the role of the Israelite in making the offering, that is the physical procedure. Yadam tivi ena et yishei Adonai et achelev al achazeh yivienu et achazeh lanifoto tznufa lefnei Adonai. And the Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the Israelites saying, one who offers a shlamim sacrifice to God must be from the one who is bringing the peace offering, the shlamim to God, which means if you're giving the sacrifice, you gotta come to the Azarah, to the Mishkan, to the courtyard of the Mishkan, to do the service personally. His hand, must bring the fire-based sacrifice of God in Isheh, with the chela fats on the breast meat, he must bring it, which means that the fats must be sort of laid out in his hand, and the breast meat is put on top of it, and he waves it, at Tznufa, he waves it as an offering before God. So the Israelite offer the sacrifice would hold up the breast, with the chelev on top of it and shake it to and fro and side to side. And that would constitute his actions that were necessary to kind of the ritual that he would have to do once the animal was slaughtered. At this point, there's clearly a handoff to the Kohen, since it says, "Vikdira Kohen et achelev amizbecha vaya chazel aron uvanav vet shokemin titanu l'truma la kohen mizivchei shal mechem hamakriv et dam ha-shlamim ve'et ha-chelev mibnei Aaron lo tiyeh shokayamin lemana lo not lo aleph no but lo to him tiyeh shokayamin lemana ki et chazei ha-tnufa v'et shok ha-truma lakachti mei bnei Yisrael mizivchei shal mechem va'etein otam la-Aaron ha-kohen u-levanav l'chok olam mei bnei Yisrael. Now I'm going to translate that all together. And the priest shall set the chelev fat to smoking on the altar, which means nobody could eat it, not the priest, not the person. So that was part of what's called the imurim, the things that were burnt on the altar. The other things aren't mentioned. There were other things that were mentioned. All the innards that we spoke about are of course, burnt on the altar as well. But the chelev, you know, was the most significant part. But the breast meat belongs to Aaron and his sons. They get the chazeh. Continuing on with the translation, specifically it is the child of Aaron, that is the Kohen, who offered the blood of the Shlamim. It is to him who gets the breast meat and the right thigh as a portion, as a gift. Because the shaken breast meat, that is the breast meat which was munaf, which was shaken all around, and the gift of the thigh I have taken from the Israelites from their peace offering sacrifices, and I gave them to Aaron and his sons in an eternal law from the Israelites. Obviously, except for the fats and the previously mentioned kidneys and livers and lobe of the liver, etc., they were burnt on the altar. The rest of the animal was good eaten for the Israelite. However, the chazeh, which was shaken around, and the shok and the thigh, that the right thigh, the shokemin, that was given to the Kohen for his portion. Finally, in this aliyah, we sum things up regarding these sacrifices. Zot mishchat Aaron, mishchat banav meyishei Adonai biyom ekrivotam lechayin ladonai. Asher tzivah Adonai latei lahem biyom moshcho otam me'et bnei Yisrael chukat olam dorotechem zot haTorah laola lamincha. לחתן ולהשם ולמילואים ולזבח השלמים אשר ציווה אדוני את משה בהר סיני ביום צוותו בני ישראל להקריב את קורבניהם לאדוני במדבר סיני. These are the benefits of of Aaron being anointed and of his sons being anointed. That is, we're not talking about a special time of being anointed. We're saying because of the fact that they were Mishchat Aaron and Mishchat Bana, because they were appointed as priests, they are allowed to get the following benefits specifically, which are taken from the fire-based sacrifices of God, from the Ishei of Hashem, which was set up on the day that they were offered up to serve as priests of the Lord. Note the word here, lahakriv, which was normally talking about the animals being offered up, is referring to the priests, as if the priests are somehow offered up or offer themselves up as sacrifices to God, in the sense not, of course, that they're actually slaughtered, God forbid, but in the fact that they have to take care of all of the slaughtering and all of the, or not the slaughtering per se, but all of the duties and responsibilities of taking care of the holy needs for the rest of the people. So they essentially sacrifice their freedom, if you will, their ability to hold property. They become like offerings, essentially, which is, you know, kind of very interesting to use that word. But continuing on with verse 36, which the Lord commanded to be given to them on the day that he, God, anointed them from out of the Israelites, an eternal law for every generation, which means they get all these special things the minute I made them Kohanim and decided that Aaron and his children would be the Kohanim, the ones who did the service in the temple, and that will last for every generation. That is to say, it's not just a one-time deal. Getting back to the translation, these are the instructions for the Olah, the Mincha, the Chatat, the Asham, the Miluim. The Miluim were special offerings that took place during the 7 days when the Mishkan was being readied for first-time use, the Shiva Imei Miluim. The details of those sacrifices could be found back in Exodus Chavtet in 29, and we're also going to get on to those issues of the 7 days of Miluim in the next Aliyah. Getting back to the verse, and for the Shlamim sacrifice, which means the fact that the Kohanim are allowed to take from all these things, that applies to all of these sacrifices, the Olah, the Mincha, the Chatat, the Asham, the Miluim, and the Shlamim. Getting back to the translation, which the Lord commanded Moses while he was on Mount Sinai, how the Israelites should offer their offerings to God in the Sinai desert, which means that the essential instructions did not happen in the Ohel Moed. The essential instructions, and even of the Miluim, certainly of the Miluim, happened while Moshe was still on the mountain. In the next Aliyah, we essentially, as I mentioned, go semi-historical, as the Torah gives the commandments to the priests, which were necessary to prepare the Mishkan for use. It went through a 7 day of fulfillment of Miluim, and there are various laws that go along with that 7 day inception, or Chanukah, of the Mishkan, and we will see them in the next Aliyah.